Hello, everyone, and welcome to the intro before the show. What you're about to hear is a conversation with myself and Mr. Colby Sharp. I did not check some of my boxes, and I recorded the whole episode without my mic audio. I had the mic sitting in front of me. It was amazing, and I didn't capture any of the mic audio. I did capture computer audio, though, so my voice is going to sound less great than it usually does. It's okay, though. It doesn't really take away from the content, because most of it, as you know, is the person I have on the show. It's less about me and more about them, so he'll sound about where all of my long-distance conversations sound. I will sound a little echoey, sort of, if that's the right word for it, but it's okay. Sorry for the audio mess up. I will try not to let it happen again. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Teach Me Teacher, a podcast for educators where we, the teachers, become students ourselves. I'm your host, Jacob Chastain, and today I am with the fabulous Colby Sharp, who has once run around his room jumping on tables screaming, "I love reading," and he's also the editor and manager of the Creativity Project. All right. Hi, Colby. How you doing today?
I am living the dream, Jacob. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. It's Saturday morning here. We had a pretty crazy day on Friday at my school, so I am in recovery mode in some ways, but we're doing great. I'm glad to have you on the show finally. We've been trying to do it for a while.
Yeah. Thanks for your patience there.
Oh, you're good. You have 8,000 projects going, which we're going to hit on in the podcast. And you're one of those people who I follow, and you know, I love putting out content, and you just have so much of it. I don't know how you squeeze it all in, to be honest. Anyway, so let's go ahead and jump right into it. For people who don't know who you are, where do you teach? What do you teach? And what are you currently doing with all of your time?
So I am a fifth grade teacher in Parma, Michigan, which is a teeny tiny town. It's about 90 minutes west of Detroit, 45 minutes south of Lansing, in the lower middle part of Michigan. I actually teach in the same school I attended as a child. I moved classrooms this year, but my classroom last year, I could actually see my parents' house, the house that I grew up in from my classroom. I teach two sections of language arts and reading, half of the day with a group of kids, and then they switch, and I get another group in the afternoon. My teaching partner teaches the math, science, and social studies. I am the co-founder of the Nerdy Book Club with Donald Miller. We run that with Catherine Sokolowski and Cindy Minnick. I run the Yarn Podcast with my friend Travis Yonker. The Creativity Project is a book that I collaborated on with 44 amazing book creators. And that actually comes out March 13th. I've been playing around a lot on YouTube lately, making videos and that sort of thing. But yeah, having a lot of fun. Had my dream job in my dream school, and I could not be more blessed.
That's pretty incredible that you teach at the same school you went to.
Yeah, I actually taught for, I think, 6 years at Mingus Brook Elementary in Battle Creek, Michigan. And it was I loved it. It was the most amazing school that I had ever been in for any reason. We had this amazing coaching program where I had a literacy expert from our school in my classroom every single week for 6 years. And they would watch something that I was doing, and that is something that I had a question on. And then we would debrief afterwards, and then I would come up with an action plan, and then we do it all over again the next week. I attribute that so much more than anything else to the success that I've been able to have as a teacher. Just having that coaching model, it's something that I miss tremendously now. I loved it. So yeah, but I'm back home. The only job I ever would have left Battle Creek for is to teach here at home, next to my parents' house and where my children go. So I have three of my own children are here at Parma with me. It's a lot of fun.
You know, we like to stay with our people. You know, when we find our people and we get stuck with our people, you know, we like to stay in that same world. I went to school all through my years growing up in the district that I work in. So, you know, I'm with all the teachers
Yeah, I go to trainings with the teachers who taught me, and those are my colleagues now. And there's nothing quite like having that relationship just over so long, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty special. I have this probably a stupid goal, but I'd like for my family to be like the greatest family in the history of our school district, which is silly. But my dad, he went to school here. My grandmother went to school here. My wife was athlete of the year, valedictorian. Two of my siblings were athletes of the year. I'm the oldest of seven. I still have two more brothers that are still going through school, and they're finding a lot of success. My wife taught here for a while before she moved on to be an ed tech consultant. So yeah, I want the Sharp name to mean something in the community. And I want to give back to, I guess, the community that gave me so much.
Yeah. And man, I feel that a lot because I never thought I was a community guy. Like, I grew up, my family, a fairly broken family in terms of what you would call that, right? We had a lot of, you know, drug abuse in the house and things like that. So I never had that community mindset until I realized that my biggest community was my school, right? My teachers who stuck up for me and the teachers who pushed me to read more and dive into literature and on the music side. You know, in Drumline, they focused my brain, even though I was a butthole in high school. You know, they still were there to keep me in line. But like that community aspect of what we do, that we're a community of learners, we're a community of people who genuinely want to help each other all the way down to the student level. And I think that's when the magic starts happening, specifically with, you know, ELA and reading instruction. And what I've seen in you is you guys and Donalyn, you guys both kind of talk about like this community of readers. You know, how does that affect your view on community? How does that affect the way you kind of run your classroom with teaching literature with your students?
Yeah, well, I think if you have a community and kids feel safe and kids want to push each other and kids feel like the only, like that's a positive thing. Like if they come up short or things don't go well, then it's not going to be a big deal, but we're going to pick each other up. So I think to get kids to do anything that maybe is outside their comfort zone, then they need to be in a place where they feel safe and they know that we're not going to let each other fail. So feeling safe in the community and feeling like we all have each other's back, I think you need that in any subject you're teaching, in any sport that you're coaching, and any band that you're directing. If you make kids feel like they're a part of something special, then they're going to be willing to try things outside their comfort zone.
Yeah. And that's, I feel like that's really important. When we're trying to get kids to develop the love for reading and literature in general, is to give them that freedom and comfort of trying new things. Cause you know, tell me if you've had the same experience. You know, when I'm in my class, we don't inherit readers at my school. A lot of our kids don't come from homes that have a lot of books. A lot of them, you know, by the time they get to my sixth grade classroom, have only read the books that their teachers have read out loud to them. They haven't done a lot of independent reading, things like that. So they're developing readers. And one of the biggest tools that I find is that if I can get them to trust in the process of exploring and trying new things and picking up books and exploring them in a non-judgmental way, I feel like that goes so, that gives me so much mileage for how much time it takes to get that. Do you find that that happens in your classroom too?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that when kids see other kids trying things, you know, when kids see other kids reading, when kids see other kids willing to share their writing or try new genres, or when it just seems like a safe place where everyone's trying different things, then I think kids are willing to step outside maybe their comfort zones. But I think also it's important that they know that, you know, if I want to read 27 graphic novels in a month, then my teacher's going to be totally cool with me reading 27 graphic novels. So I think it's important that we honor who they are as readers and writers and thinkers, and we celebrate that. And find ways to push them to try different things, but in a way where we are still honoring the things that make them who they are.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you brought up graphic novels. I had a student, we were doing a little data exercise where they were just calculating kind of how many books they've read this year so far. And I had a kid raise his hand and he was like, do graphic novels count as books? And I'm like, Well, first of all, that's like in my category of, you know, what we're talking about. When we're talking about books. Of course, graphic novels are books. But second of all, like, no matter how much I've reiterated that, like, it's still ingrained in them that, like, you know, it's not somewhere along the way. They got this idea that certain types of literature aren't valid. And that's kind of a shame because all literature has this value, right? I mean, there's tons of great stuff out there. Where do you think our students get this idea that certain things aren't as valuable as others? Is it a teacher thing? Is it a culture thing? Where does this idea come from?
I think it comes from the gatekeepers. I think it comes from parents, and I think it comes from teachers. So I think it's we're doing it to them because I don't see why any kid would think that those aren't real books if they haven't gotten that message from an adult. And that kind of sucks.
You know what? When I found you, you know, I kind of knew about you through Donald and Miller, that connection. But when I really started paying attention is you posted a video a while ago where a student you knew contacted you for a book that he was like, he needed a book to read. And it was for a reading program. And, you know, it was kind of a rant. It's one of your ranty videos, which is fairly rare from you, which was interesting. But, you know, you went on this idea of, you know, like these reading programs and how, you know, as educators, we're forcing these, we're teaching literature through programs rather than teaching literature through the power of meaning in the actual work themselves. I mean, could you just give us a couple thoughts on your, I don't want to dwell on this subject too long, but just some thoughts on like when you're approaching your books in your classroom, you know, what is the way we should be offering our kids the look into literature versus kind of what are some of the ways that damage the kids' view of reading?
Well, I mean, there's no research to show that things like accelerated reader help kids long term. And there is tons of research that says that if kids are reading independently and kids are reading books that they choose and kids are in the reading workshop model, that kids are going to be successful. So it's not rocket science to me, but it is hard. Like, I get that it's hard to read a lot of books. I have had a few years where I've read 1,000 kids' books in a year, and it's really hard. And it is maybe not hard is the right word, but it takes a lot of time and a lot of commitment. But if we know that that's what's best for kids and it's important to us, then we need to find a way to fit some reading of children's books into our schedule. And it's tricky. Like, I get it. And you don't know what you don't know. Like, I think about 11 years ago when I'm walking into my classroom for the first time, I didn't know the damages that an accelerated reader could do. I'm lucky that I was taught in a school that didn't use it. I didn't know the damages that, like, or a basal reading program is going to hamper kids' reading lives. I didn't know that kind of thing. So I think it's really important that, you know, maybe we help educate each other and we help find ways to show teachers and maybe even more importantly, administrators. Because if we have a school that's, you know, pushing accelerated reader, or we have a school that's pushing, you know, these giant reading books on kids and teachers, then it's going to be hard for that teacher. So I don't know. It's really hard. Like, I just want kids to love reading, and there are ways that you can do that, and there are ways that you can't do that. So I just want to try. Personally, my philosophy is, you know, figure out what works and do that. And those things don't work, so I try not to do them.
I mean, you can't say it more simple than that, right? You know, I think, you know, when I talk to people about this, and, you know, it's been a subject on the podcast a lot, you know, partly because I'm an ELA teacher, but partly because literacy is such a big, it's a big thing in a lot of our public schools around the country and other countries as well. But I think we get this idea that, like, it's almost like we're afraid to teach in a way, like, a lot, you know, some, like, when I say we, I mean, you know, administrators are, and teachers were afraid to, like, just let us learn. You know what I mean? Like, we're stuck to the curriculum and we're stuck to this timetable. And in some schools, you know, they're stuck to their scripts and, you know, very, you know, depending on where you teach and what state you teach, and we're stuck to the test. And really, like, ELA education and teaching literacy in a variety of contents, because literacy isn't just limited to us, is, you know, it's a messy process in some ways. Like, you don't become a reader by, you know, reading something and answering questions, right? When was the last time you went to a bookstore and, you know, found a book according to your Lexile number? You know what I mean? Like, it's like, but it's almost like we want a systematic way. Do you feel like that it's because we love shortcuts, or because where does that fear come from in our school system? If that's even the correct way, I might be wrong on this.
Yeah, it's really tricky, because I don't think that anyone's out there trying to do what's wrong for kids.
Sure.
Like, I don't see that at all. And teaching is an interesting thing, because teachers as a profession, like, to generalize, we like are obsessed with doing really well on our evaluations. Like, teachers are, from what I have seen, like, we're obsessed with like getting a highly effective, or we're obsessed with our evaluations, and we freak out when we're being observed oftentimes. And like, I hate that. Like, I hate that we have all of this pressure on us to feel like we have to be perfect. Yeah. And yeah, like, the best evaluation in the world, it's not going to help you as a teacher in any way. Like, I want my evaluation to have some warts on it. Not because I don't want to be a great teacher, but because I look at my evaluation as an opportunity to get better. And I look at it as an opportunity to grow as a teacher. And I hate that so often we're felt like, you know, if your evaluation isn't this, you're going to lose your job. And if you don't do this, you're going to lose your job. And maybe, I don't even know if that's like really going to happen, but I feel like teachers are so, and we're, teachers are such perfectionists. Like, I remember being in like classes in college where you're with just teachers. And like, I was like, oh my gosh, this is insane. Like, everyone is like obsessed with every single point. And like, here I am just trying to get a B. And like, so many of everyone is a perfectionist. And it's fascinating to me, like, when you leave that part of college where you're with everyone in your classes, like your freshman and sophomore year, and you get to the classes where you're with just teachers, and I think, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, I love that we take things seriously and we want to do well. It's like, we're so focused on, I mean, and then we do that to our students, right? Like, kids at some point in school, it stops being about the learning and it starts being about the grade. And it worries me that education today is doing that to teachers. It stops, like, they're making it so we're so obsessed with our grade or our rating that we are so focused on that. Maybe we're doing things that prevent us from growing as much as we'd like as teachers.
Stops being about the learning and more about the grade. What, I mean, it's just a fantastic point, because, you know, I'm a, you know, I'll cop to this too. There's been times where, you know, I'm so concerned with like this grade and grading and stuff like that. And then every once in a while, you just gotta, like, take a breath, you know, specifically this year. Like, I feel like I've taken a big step back from that. I'm just like, okay, what learning is happening here? Like, their grade on this isn't as important as them developing the skills that they need to write better or to notice something better. Like, that's the dirty work of education. And that's the fun part, right? When you get to interact and really get into, you know, exploring things with them, that's the learning part. And yeah, maybe you can assign a grade to everything, but that's, you know, I just think that's such a fantastic point. I think we really are focused on the grade, including, you know, when we get our standardized tests back, right? It's like the pass rate. And it's, you know, passing is one thing out of this massive ecosystem of education.
Yeah, I learned a lot four years ago, maybe. My wife, who was a high school chemistry teacher until about a year and a half ago, she switched to standards-based gradings with her 11th and 12th grade chemistry students. And it was fascinating. Like, everything was based on the learning, like, compared to the standard. And if a kid didn't do well, then they could go back and do it again. And kids were so, it was really interesting, like, how hard it was on some of the kids, like, to, like, they just cared about their grade, and she wouldn't let it be about the grade. It was always about the learning. So, like, kids were like, how do I get my grade up? They would be like, well, what don't you know? Like, let's look at your, I don't remember what she called it, LTAs. I can't even remember what that stood for. But basically, it was like the standard, like, well, oh, look, you're struggling with this. Let's learn this, and then we can give you another assessment on it. And then your grade then in the end goes up because you actually learned the content. And it was really hard for 11th and 12th graders to focus in on the learning. But I bet that they learn more in that class, one, because she's an amazing teacher, but two, because like if they wanted the grade, then they had to learn the chemistry. And like, there's not, we're not just going to do extra credit. We're not going to, you know, you're not going to be able to just turn in your homework and get a good grade, but like everything is going to be based on whether or not you know the content. So I think the more we can get schools to focus in on the learning, the more successful kids are going to be. Like, cause no one, like when you get to like a real job, it's all about, can you do the job or not? It's not about, can you play the game or play the system? It's like, what can you do? How do you bring value to your employer?
Yeah. I want to shift gears and go to this idea of talking about our work. Cause we're both kind of, yeah, we both kind of do the same thing. My, you know, Teach Me Teacher is more about highlighting other voices rather than my own. But I have used the platform to share some things that I'm doing in my classroom. But, you know, that's definitely not the focus. But you do a lot of vlogs where, you know, my favorite stuff that you do is just the honest, you know, you just finished class or whatever and you turn on your camera and you just kind of reflect on what happened that day, or you reflect on a sub note or, you know, something like that. And what made you start doing that? Cause it's exposing in a lot of ways, and it's uncomfortable to a lot of people to be so honest about what you're doing to an audience of strangers on the internet. So what drove this desire to start sharing your work?
So it started, I guess, last year when I was a third grade teacher, like the student obsession with YouTube was like becoming a real thing. Like, I had known that my kids loved YouTube and that kids spent a lot of time on YouTube. But it felt like last year, like they were really like, it became where it like was the year where you stopped wanting to be like a famous singer and you started to want to be a YouTube star. So I figured, and I had like multiple students creating YouTube videos. So I decided to do like a deep dive into YouTube and really try to learn about YouTube and find like what kind of content I would like on YouTube. And I found two creators that I loved. One was Casey Neistat, who is this amazing vlogger. And the other is Gary Vaynerchuk, who is a businessman. And I became absolutely obsessed with both of them.
Gary V. I love the Daily V.
Yeah. So I think a lot of me deciding to create those vlogs came from just following what Gary V has to say about content over creation. Like, it's really hard and it's really scary to like create things and like I'm not, because if you notice my videos, it's not like I am detailing like a lesson or detailing a small group or a writing conference or a reading conference, which I could do, but that would take so much more time to create. Yeah. Those videos, I'm just trying to share what we're doing in our classroom. I'm just trying to document our journey, and through that, like if you watch all the videos, what you're going to see is we read a lot. We write a lot. I read aloud to them every single day. We talk about books every single day. And, you know, that's my heart is in those things. So, and like put it being exposed and putting myself out there. Yeah, that doesn't bother me. That doesn't scare me at all. I'm confident in what we're doing in this class. And like, I really feel like we're doing some special things. I hope that doesn't make me sound too like arrogant. But you know, I think that we all should be proud of what we're doing in our classroom. And if you can help one person, like if one person watches your video and gets something out of it, or 10 people or 20 people, then, you know, we need to get out there and share. We had a speaker come to our school a few years ago, and he talked a lot about like myths in education and in the world. And his end point was like, we need to share our stories. Because if we're not sharing our stories, other people will. And I don't want other people to tell the story of what we're doing in our classroom. I want to be part of that narrative. So yeah, I make videos, do podcasts, share pictures. And I love being able to do it. And all of my students watch, not all of them, but a bunch of my students watch my videos, which is really weird. I just feel like they should have better things to do than my vlogs. And they'll say things like, Mr. Sharp, I've been noticing that in your B-roll, which I love that they know the word B-roll. I'm noticing in your B-roll that you have the morning class in your B-roll a lot more than the afternoon class. I'm now thinking that that's fair. So then I'll try to do like more B-roll with the afternoon class and that sort of thing. But my vlogs are like super simple. Basically, I hit record in the morning and talk for a minute. And then like once or twice during the day, maybe three times, I'm basically just like doing like a quick lap around the room and just filming it so I can kind of see who's on task, who's not on task, what the kids are reading. And then I just splice all that up into like 3 second, 2 second clips for the B-roll. And then when the kids go to special, I'll record something from the morning. And then when the kids go home, I'll record something at the end of the day and then a little bit of editing. So it's not like it's taking me a ton of time to share what we're doing. I love it, though. It's super fun for me to reflect on it. It forces me to think about the best parts of the day. It forces me to try to find gold in a muddy day. So, yeah, I really, even if nobody watched it, I think I'd still do it because it would be fun to look back at someday.
Yeah, no, and it's there. I mean, there's so many, like, you know, I grew up kind of when YouTube was really kind of taken off and, you know, before Google had it, and it was all about the vlog, right? People would just turn on their webcam and talk about whatever they wanted to. And it's still kind of like that in a lot of places, but it's become very, you know, sanitized. It's very monetization focused in a lot of ways. So you get away from these natural vlogging people. They're still out there, but it's just not as popular. And what I really love about yours is I love seeing, you know, one of the reasons I started this podcast was because teachers tend to learn best from teachers, just hearing someone else talk about what they're doing, right? Even if it's not the greatest lesson, even if they're talking about a bad experience, right? Even if they're talking about a fear or something like that. I always get something from when a teacher is talking or an educator of some sort, because it's just real and we can relate to them and our jobs are hard and we can have great days and we can have days where it's just like everything collapsed like all at once. And having that reciprocal relationship where you can just talk and listen to somebody is really therapeutic in a lot of ways. And that's what I get from when I watch your videos, is just like, oh, you know, he's having real days just like everyone else. Do you find that doing that, you know, you mentioned briefly, you know, that reflecting thing and finding the good and the bad days, has it made you a better teacher by being so open about things? Does it allow you to go deeper into your own practices?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It makes me really think about like what I'm doing and why I'm doing it, because I'm talking about it and I'm going to share it. And like, I'll even be thinking like in a conference, like, oh, what I did there really helped that kid. I'm going to talk about that. So why did I do it? And what exactly was it that I did? So yeah. And it's interesting, like you say, good days and bad days. Like I don't ever have a bad day. Like nothing, like I'll get a bad sub note or we'll have an AR issue that I'll get mad about online or something. But like I'm not just saying that, like I am so blessed. Like all of my parents are alive and very healthy. I lived over 30 years with all four grandparents alive. My five wonderful kids were healthy. I have an amazing wife who is just my rock and is super amazing in all ways. I was born a white man in America. Like I seriously have like hit the life lottery. So I feel like nobody wants to hear anybody complain. And maybe I'll go on a little rant here and there, but I want 99% of what I do and what I say to be positive, because there's plenty of people whose lives are way harder than me. I have no right to ever complain about anything.
No, so let's hit on that, because, you know, you are one of the more positive influences that I've seen out there. Like almost, I would say nearly everything you do. And I've read, you know, interviews where, you know, where it might be a negative question, you always end up spinning to the positive, just like you did just now on the podcast. So it's one of those skills that is phenomenal to have. But I just want to, you know, I want to hit on this, because I don't know if you see the same things I do, but I do see there's so much negativity that can happen in a school. It can happen in the creative spaces online where teachers get together and we just kind of complain about stuff. And the narrative of education has just seems to have like this cloud of negativity around it in a lot of ways. Do you see that, or like, is the positivity that you're putting out there, is that only attracting the positivity to yourself?
No, I see negativity all over the place, especially online. But also in schools, I think it's going to be like that everywhere. There's going to be different personalities no matter where we hang out. I was listening to the new Tim Ferriss podcast recently. He's got like a new show based on his book, Tribe of Mentors. And there's this quote that they talked about, and I can't remember who said the quote, but it's basically like you become like a mixture of the five people you spend the most time with. And I've been thinking about that a lot. And then there's another quote that, and this is terrible because I don't know who said any of these quotes, but Dave Ramsey uses this quote a lot. And it's basically, I think it was Dr. Charles Stanley who said this. I apologize if it's incorrect, but it's like in 5 years from today, you'll be the same person you are, except for the books that you read and the people you meet. So I've tried to surround myself with awesome people. I think that's like the most important thing a new teacher can do is to become friends with the best teacher at that school and the best two or three teachers. And when I think about my time in Battle Creek and my time here at Western, like the people who I spend the most time with are the best teachers. We have a teacher here who I taught with the last 4 years. Her name is Mrs. Woolworth. And she's like the best teacher in our district, maybe the county, maybe the state. And I just try to spend as much time around her as I can. And like, she never complains. She's always positive. She's always got a super hard class because she's so good. And like, just spending time around people who are awesome just makes you more awesome.
Yeah. And, Gary Vee talks about that too, where, you know, he always mentions, you know, your look at your best friends, look at your, you know, the people who are around you and see what they're doing. And if they're not contributing to kind of the future that you want to be in, then, you know, drop them, right? Like, go to the people who are doing great things, be around the positive, be around, the powerful. You definitely have that in spades. I mean, come on. You do a podcast with Donalyn Miller, and she's such a guru, man. It was such a pleasure to talk to her on the podcast.
As Donalyn always says, no matter what we're working on, I probably heard her say this more than anything else. How is this going to help kids? Like, no matter what project we're talking about, no matter what thing we're working on, she always brings it back to, is this going to help kids? How is this going to help kids? So I think making your decisions based on that, you're always going to make the right choice.
You know, you do so many different things, as we mentioned earlier. You know, you have like 3 podcasts, you do vlogs, you do all these different things. How, like, when you're using all of this stuff, you know, how do you decide, like, is there a decision process that goes into where you spend your time? Is there anything in particular that you feel is gives you more value as an educator, or do you just do all of these things because you like the variety? Like, is it more of a necessity that you have these 3 things, or not 3 things, these multiple projects, or do you just love variety? So that's where you've gotten all of these different projects from.
I think I want to help as many people as I can. And I think I want to learn from as many different people as I can. And different people are in different places. I know, like, younger people, there's so many younger educators on Snapchat. So, like, I'm playing in Snapchat, not because I love Snapchat, but because I want to be where the teachers are, because I want to learn from them and I want to learn with them. And if there's anything that I can help them with, I want to help them. So I try to do everything, because different people have different places where they are. One of the reasons I'm getting into YouTube more, I just feel like there's not a lot of people talking about best practices in reading and writing on YouTube. So that's one reason. Like, if people are going to YouTube to look for help, like, if they want to watch vlogs, then I'm not seeing it there. I'm seeing a lot of beautiful, fancy teacher pay teacher classrooms and with pretty bulletin boards, and that's fine. But I want them, if they want what I have, then I want to be there for them. So I feel like if I'm going to help as many people as I can and be helped by as many people as I can, then I need to be where they are. So I try to be everywhere.
That's a solid point. Is, you know, if your goal is to truly help people, then you need to be where those people are. I mean, anyone can talk into a vacuum, right?
Like, it goes back to like classroom newsletter. Like, I used to send home classroom newsletters all the time. And boy, did I work hard. Boy, was it cute. I don't think anyone really read my classroom newsletter, right? So why am I doing this if there's no one reading it? Like, am I just doing it because teachers are supposed to make classroom newsletters? So what? I started a classroom Facebook page for parents. And like, the parents were all on Facebook and the parents were all there. So it was amazing. Like, I remember one time I needed spaghetti noodles and I sent a note home and I got no spaghetti noodles. And then like another time I needed spaghetti noodles and I put it on our class Facebook page and I had 5 boxes of spaghetti noodles. Like, we need to go where the parents are. And now my parents' email seems to be the best way to reach them. So if it's not like something that needs a phone call, then I'm using email. Or you got to go where the people are. Like, we can't be like our friend Gary Vee talks about, like being romantic about something. Would I love for everything to be on Twitter and everyone to be on Twitter? Sure. I mean, let's just be real. That's where I have like the most influence, is on Twitter. But like, I can't be romantic about Twitter because it was big in 2014. I need to be where people are now and I need to meet people where they are now. I can't be, it's not about the platform. It's about where people are. Yeah, I think that's why. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. And this is something I've been thinking about, you know, as Teach Me Teacher grows. You know, I'm looking, you know, to find all of these, you know, different avenues. And what's funny is I hate like social media. Like, I like the conversation that can happen through social media, and I like the connections that can happen. But I hate I just don't like advertising, you know, and I don't like putting things out there in certain ways. Like, that's why I kind of am attracted to Gary Vee's philosophy of just like, put the content out there. The more great content you'll find, greater, you know, better people. But at the same time, I'm like, I want to be a part of the bigger conversation. I want to get people on this podcast because I truly believe that we're putting out content that's going to help educators all around the world. So you kind of have to step into that world. But I look at it and I'm just like, God, you know, I want to get on Twitter and I want to talk to the people I want to talk to. I don't want to sit there and talk about my podcast. You know what I mean? I want to do that type of, do you ever get that feeling that it, you know, you don't want to push your own stuff. You just kind of want to talk, but you kind of have to, because you do have these other things you're doing. You have a book coming out, you have podcasts, you have all these things.
Yeah, I think that is definitely tricky. Because there are some people who are on social media mostly to like when they need something. So I think that is hard. But like, if you believe in your podcast and you believe that it is going to bring value to teachers, then, you know, you should be tweeting about it multiple times a week. You should be taking clips from the episode with Donalyn Miller and taking a 1-minute audio clip from that and putting that behind Donalyn's picture and putting it on Instagram with 20 or 30 hashtags so that as many people can hear it as possible. And it feels weird. Like, I hate the Instagram game of hashtags, and like, sometimes I'll do it and sometimes I won't. But like, if you believe in the content and you want to help people and you want to be a part of the conversation, then you have to get in front of them. And yeah, like a grassroots movement of like people finding it, like that might happen. But there's probably teachers now who need your episode with Donalyn or your episode with whomever. So like, you have to get it out there, and you have to be using whatever method that you can to make sure, you know, it finds the right ears. Like a podcast with Donalyn Miller, like a conversation with Donalyn Miller, people want to hear that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I know it's hard, and I get it. Like, I have been talking about other people's books online since 2011. And I'm pretty good at it. Like, I love talking about other people's books. And now I am 4 months away from my book coming out. My book with, thankfully it's with other people, so I can just celebrate them. But it is hard and it is different. But I feel like the book will really help educators, and I think that kids will really like it. So I guess, you know, goes back to that question that Donalyn is always asking, how is this going to help kids? And, you know, I think your podcast is going to help kids. I think a vlog about my day and the books you're reading aloud might help kids. So it might feel weird, but if it's going to help kids, then you need to share it, man.
So for teachers who are kind of, you know, stepping into this world, like, I work with a fabulous teacher. I had her on the podcast, you know, when she was, you know, she was just kind of learning a lot of things, and she was a rock star when she started, and she's a rock star this year, and she's right across the hall from me, you know, and we always have, you know, we have our music playing and we're dancing in the hallways to get the kids hyped up coming in our rooms and whatnot. And she's just an incredible educator, and she's starting to get into the, you know, she's a little bit more on the Instagram, stuff like that. And she, you know, after going to Ron Clark Academy, you know, she, that really inspired her to, like, just embrace the awesome of education. You know, it really opened a lot of doors for her, and she wants to start sharing things. And one of the things that she's like, you know, I just don't know if I have, like, she's, there's not a lot of confidence in what she wants to share. And, you know, one of the things I wanted to ask you is, for anyone who's listening who wants to get into this, you know, maybe, you know, they might not be the biggest person in education, but they have something to share. You know, what would you tell these educators who are out there who kind of want to jump into that, but they just don't feel like they're doing anything that needs to be posted?
Yeah, you know, we've mentioned Gary Vee, and one of the things that he says is perfection is disguise for insecurity. And, like, if it reaches one person, if you get one like or two likes or one comment, then, like, you should share it. Like, I know it's hard, and I get that. It, you know, we overanalyze some of those things and we feel like we don't have anything to add, but we do, because we're all doing things for kids and we're doing things that are right. And I think that you just have to do it. Like, you just need to share the great things that you're doing, because it's going to help one person, and one is greater than zero. So by not sharing it, you're helping zero people. But if you share it, and it's good, you know, it helped a kid, or it, you're proud of it, then it's going to help someone. And even if it's just that someone is also doing something similar, then it's going to validate what they're doing. And maybe you'll make a connection, and then you'll become friends. Like, I became friends with Donald Miller, John Hsu. So many of my best friends in the world now are because I was willing to hit tweet, or I was willing to hit publish. So it's hard. But, you know, we need each other. So I think that, I think everybody should share. I think everybody should have an online presence that feels comfortable with it, because we can, we're way better together.
Yeah. You know, I just like the idea. No, I love the idea of framing everything with the help mindset, because, you know, one of the things that I learned quickly when I became a teacher was the more I focused on myself, the worse I did. It was when I started focusing on other people and giving, you know, and serving other people and providing value to, like, them, and just like, what do you need? What do I need to do to help you? And that started with students, and then it slowly transitioned and combined with, okay, well, how do I help education, right? And the way the first attempt at this is Teach Me Teacher, you know, empowering other voices, big and small, to come together and help a bunch of people at once. And the more I get into it, I'm like, you know, I just want to share what I'm doing just to have another voice to, just to be a part of the conversation, just to have, you know, like you said, you know, if you don't share, you're helping zero people. And I think that's a really powerful thing, because it's really easy to get stuck in this idea that you need to help, you know, a million people, right? You need to be the next big name, but you don't.
Yeah, I was listening to this YouTube guy today, actually, at the gym. And he was saying, like, he was like a guy who helps YouTubers. His name is Roberto Blake. And he was saying, like, he's so sick of people complaining that they only get 50 people to watch their YouTube video or 100 people to watch a YouTube video. And he says, like, I've spoken in rooms with 50 people, and I've spoken in rooms with 100 people. It's a lot of people. Like, it's a lot of, like, it's true. Like, it's a lot of people. Like, if you get, like, 20 people to, like, watch your video or listen to your podcast or see your tweet, like, that's a lot. Like, when you think about, like, what if all those people were in a room with you? And then, like, if you keep doing it and it's 100 or 200 or 300, like we can't worry so much about the numbers or how many followers you have and that sort of thing. So I think we can have a big impact by helping just a few people. And, like, even if, like, a ton of people aren't seeing, like, just doing it yourself, like, just composing that tweet and thinking about your practice, or taking that picture and being ready to share it on Instagram, like even if zero people see it, like the reflection that you had to do in creating that and thinking about your own practice, you're already helping yourself. So like if nothing else, if you're not helping anybody else, if no one else is seeing it, you're helping yourself. So then you're helping your students, which comes back to that question, how is this helping kids?
I'm so glad we were able to hit on this topic, because that is, it's powerful. You know, we can talk about strategies, we can talk about structures, and we can talk about, you know, best practices in the classroom, but we should also have that reflective piece, right? I mean, it's part of a powerful lesson too. You can't just teach something and never have the kid think about what they're actually doing, right? You got to have that reflection piece. What's the thinking that's going on here? And as educators, it's really hard for us to do it in the moment sometimes, because there's a lot of things going on. But if we spend time creating something, doing a tweet, posting on Facebook, posting on Instagram, then it literally does, like you said, force you to think about what you're doing. Just to compose a small response, it literally drives that thought process, even just a little bit.
100%.
And, you know, so Kobe, I want to close with, you know, what are your, like, if you could give advice just to teachers who want to start down this path of, you know, reflection in any way that they want, you know, whether it be vlogs or Twitter or Instagram or a combination, or start a podcast or start a revolution, you know, whatever they want to do, what would be your advice to someone who has never done any of that before? What would be the thing you told the teacher if they're sitting in front of you right now?
Man, I guess don't expect anything from anyone else. Like, don't go into it wanting other people to give things to you. Don't expect anyone ever. Don't expect certain people to follow you. Don't expect certain people to like your posts. Don't expect other people to give you something. But go into it willing to give and give and give and give, just like you do in your classroom. Because the more that you give other people, the more that you bring value to them, anything else that you could want with social media will come. And anything else that you want with sharing and having like an online presence or personal brand or whatever you're looking for, it'll come if you are bringing more value to them. And like, dream big, like go like swing for the fences, like write a book or become a speaker at conferences. Like, don't ever sell yourself short. Like, you know, you have to put in the work, but like you can do, I mean, like, I really feel like you can do anything in today's internet world if you're willing to put in the work. I was interviewing Yuji Morales, who is a amazing illustrator, has won lots of awards and is phenomenal. And I was interviewing her for the Yarn Podcast and asking her about like talent, like talking about talent, like feeling like, okay, so you have worked really hard as an illustrator, and couple that with the talent that you have, you're able to be successful. And she stopped me and she was like, no, it is 100% about how hard I worked. It had nothing to do with talent. And anybody can do it if they're willing to work hard enough. And like, it just blew my mind. Like, I don't know how true that is. And like, that's not true in everything. Like, that's not true in basketball. Like, some people are just 5'6" and slow. No matter how hard they work, they're 5'6" and maybe medium speed. But in teaching and in helping other teachers, it's just like, you can do anything if you're willing to put in the work and you do it for the right reasons. So go into it wanting to give and to help, and be willing to work as hard as it takes to get what you want out of it and what you want to give.
Kobe, you have been fantastic on the podcast.
Thanks, Jacob. It was fun.
You're just, you have a way about, you have such a concise way of saying things. I'm so jealous of your ability to speak in clear terms. I feel like I just say so many words sometimes. And when I go back and listen to some of my episodes, I'm like, why couldn't I have just said that more simple? So you definitely have the gift of that style.
I have tweeted 76,000 times So that's me thinking going to 280 characters on Twitter, I think, was ridiculous. So I've thought in, you know, 76,000 or 75,970 of those tweets have probably been in 140 characters. So I'm used to that.
That's hilarious. See, look at that. Another reason to tweet more. Well, not anymore, because I guess I've extended it, but if educators wanted to contact you or find you or find your work, where would they go?
They can contact me directly. My email is colbysharp, colbysharp, @gmail.com. They can find anything else socially visiting my website, mrcolbysharp.com. But yeah, don't be afraid to just go right into email, colbysharp@gmail.com. I love email.
For everything else, Teach Me Teacher, ladies and gentlemen, you know where to go. It is teachmeteacherpodcast.com. You can also find us on Facebook as well as on Twitter, where we are part of the conversation everywhere as much as possible. I want you guys to go out there, give Colby a big shout out for coming on the podcast. He was amazing. I hope he inspired you guys to go out there and share your work. Dream big, just like Colby said, swing for the fences and get it done. For everything else, ladies and gentlemen, have a good one.